news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now, we're going to be talking about a book called JFK and Sam, because we can't get the author on, so we're just going to do open lines, and we welcome your calls from out across America. But I'm going to tell you a little bit about this amazing book, and of course it is entitled JFK and Sam. It's a story of the relationship between Sam Giancana and John Fitzgerald Kennedy. What most people don't understand is that there was a very close relationship between old Joe Kennedy and the Mafia. He had worked very, very closely with the Mafia for many years. In fact, he had actually had a relationship with Sam Giancana. Old Joe had actually cheated one of the Mafia chieftains, and there was a contract out on him, and Joe went to see Sam Giancana and pleaded with him to get the contract taken off of his life, and Sam was very obliging. Sam was a very dapper fellow. He was certainly a mobster, but there was a certain honor and code that they had. And then, of course, when John Kennedy was going to run for the presidency, Joe Kennedy came to Giancana and asked him to see what he could do to make sure that John won in the Maryland primary against Hubert Humphrey. And so Giancana made the arrangements, bought off the right people, and of course they fixed the election, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy won the Maryland primary when it should have gone to Hubert Humphrey. And then, of course, when it came forward to getting the presidency, Giancana actually, of course, bought up the votes in Chicago. They stuffed the ballot boxes. The election was supposed to have gone to Richard Nixon. The establishment expected that. But, of course, Joe Kennedy was using the Mafia to make sure that his son got to be the president of the United States, with the understanding that there would be certain bargaining points that would come about. And one of them was the fact that there was one of the mobsters who had been sent out of the country, and they were going to allow him to come back into the country, and the federal government was going to lay off of the mob. They had put a lot of money into getting John Kennedy elected, and of course they expected that they were going to get payback. Well, initially when Kennedy got into the White House, Frank Sinatra, who worked very closely with the mob and was very close to Giancana, John Kennedy invited Sinatra to the White House. Bobby Kennedy was taking trips to Las Vegas, where of course the Giancana and the mob owned a number of the casinos there, and they were providing girls for both John Kennedy and for Bobby Kennedy. And these were totally corrupt, immoral individuals. You have to understand that there's so many people out there. We have these images of, we want to put them up on a pedestal, but the great tragedy is that these people are not people of integrity at all. And so this is the real problem that we face today. We have a country that's turned its back on morality, and you're not going to get the truth about the real history of the Kennedys reading the controlled media. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. We had hoped today to have Antoinette Giancana, who is the daughter of Sam Giancana, the Chicago mobster, but I'm afraid we're not going to have her. So we were going to talk about a book which she co-authored along with a Dr. John Hughes and a Dr. Thomas Jobe. And, of course, this is a fascinating book. going into the background of the murder of an American president, and there's no question that both the CIA and the FBI were involved in this. They had to be to have covered up the truth. The fact that Lee Harvey Oswald had worked for both naval intelligence and for the FBI, and he'd worked for the Army intelligence, and he'd worked for the CIA, and of course his closest friend was George Dumorenschelt, who was also a CIA asset. And they had to cover up the real truth about it. And what this book does, entitled JFK and Sam, is just to take a reference to all the other books that have been written on this subject, along with Antoinette's remembrance of her father and Sam Giancana. Sam Giancana made it very, very clear that he intended to kill Kennedy because the President of the United States, because he had actually gone back on him. The agreement was that if he helped to get JFK elected, that JFK would lay off of him. And now they were sharing the same mistress. And Judith Exner, her name was Judith Campbell, but eventually she remarried and came to be known as Judith Campbell Exner, you know, has given a number of stories about how Sam Giancana would go to her room, and they would actually talk. Sam would call the President of the United States, and there was a close working relationship between the mobster, the Chicago mobster, and the President of the United States. And certainly they were sharing that same mistress. In fact, JFK got Judith pregnant, and Sam actually asked Judith to marry him. She wouldn't do it, but he did get an abortion for her, and he always held that against JFK as well. So there's so many things about this story that really need to be told, and this book does quite a good job about it. But the biggest thing was that the CIA hated Kennedy, because he had fired Allen Dulles and a number of other key people. And John Fitzgerald Kennedy was going to pull our troops out of Vietnam, and they wanted a war. And so the book makes it very, very clear, and of course quotes from Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who we had the privilege of interviewing, that one of the major reasons for the murder of an American president was he didn't want to get us into a war in Southeast Asia. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our regularly scheduled guest is not available, so it's going to be you and me. And if you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we're talking about how were they able to murder an American president and get away with it? Well, very, very simply, they control the media. And, of course, the CIA and the FBI working together have published all sorts of books, disinformation. They put out so many clues out there, and they're designed for one and only one purpose, and that is to confuse the American people so they cannot look effectively at what's going on. Now, this book, JFK and Sam, by Antoinette Giancana, it really is interested in the fact that it refers to a number of books written by people that we've actually interviewed. One of them is a book called Texas in the Morning, and it was written by Madeline Duncan Brown. And we actually have interviews with Madeline in my JFK update, I think it's 2005 update. Madeline Duncan Brown was Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and there was a meeting just the night before the Kennedy assassination, and there was J. Edgar Hoover and Lyndon Baines Johnson and John McCloy and people from the mafia and people from the Bunker Hunt was there, not Bunker Hunt, but his father, Bunker Hunt's father. And, of course, Clinton Murchison, I think the meeting was at Murchison's home. And here, of course, they all agreed that the murder would take place the next day. And Madeline Duncan Brown talks about how she actually was waiting for Lyndon to come out of the meeting. When he came out, he whispered into her ear, "Well, after tomorrow, I'm not going to have to take any more insults from those Kennedy boys." And he had told her later that the murder was confirmed at that point. Now, certainly it had been planned long before that. And the shooter on the grassy knoll was a fellow who is actually in permanent, he is serving a life term in a federal prison, And he has actually become a Christian, so he's come forward and told the story of what really happened and how he was, of course, hired by Mr. Rossellini, and his name basically is James Files. James Files is actually, there are a number of video interviews for him that you can sometimes find them in video stores called The Man Who Killed the President, or The Man Who Assassinated the President. That's Jimmy Files. It's because he's a Christian, a born-again Christian, that he's come forward to tell the story of what happened. And I think he feels very bad about it. Now, they're not going to try him for the murder. Why? Because that would admit that everything you've heard to date is a cover-up. So they can't try him. I suppose they could kill him. Certainly, I know he's my friend, Colonel Dan Marvin's been to see him a number of times. I've talked to other people who really believe Files' story is true. There's no question that the bullet that killed President Kennedy came from the grassy knoll. How can I say that? Well, very simply, we have an interview with Dr. Crenshaw, who was working in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital when President Kennedy came in. And the wounds you've heard described just are not true. I mean, the wound in the front of the throat came from a bullet from the front, not from the back. And the magic bullet, well, there's no way this bullet could possibly have done what it did. I mean, enter, you know, about 5 inches, 5.5 inches before below the collar line on President Kennedy and exit through the front of his throat. And, of course, then go ahead and go through Governor Connally and break a couple of ribs and leave all sorts of bullet fragments. And Dr. Crenshaw describes all of the bullet fragments that were left over, you know, when they debrided the wounds in his wrist and in his left thigh. I mean, this bullet keeps going up and down and back and forth and turning right to left, and then falls out off the gurney in the Parkland Hospital in pristine condition. How did it get there? How did a pristine bullet that had exploded in Governor Connally's left thigh suddenly reconstitute itself? Well, obviously it was planted, just like the passports were planted after 9/11 in both New York and in Pennsylvania. But, you know, never underestimate the gullibility of the American people, because most people do not want to admit that there could have been a conspiracy behind the murder of an American president, and they were able to get rid of it. And they give you so much information and disinformation, and when you control the media, and you can, of course, label anybody who questions what you're being told as a conspiracy nut, who, you know, believes there's a conspiracy. Well, of course there's a conspiracy. There's always been conspiracies. There was a conspiracy to kill Jesus. There was a conspiracy to murder Abraham Lincoln. There was a conspiracy to murder Julius Caesar. Why should we be surprised that there was a conspiracy to murder a John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who actually wanted to pull our troops out of Vietnam, who wanted a silverback currency, who actually thought he was the president of the United States? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we would, of course, love to hear from you. And, you know, if you have a question, a comment, you agree or you disagree. But having studied this, and we actually have a number of interviews, we have our first 4-tape set on President Kennedy, and there you'll, Kennedy's assassination. It was a 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who is certainly one of the experts on this whole field. He was the Pentagon liaison to the Central Intelligence Agency. He was a full bird colonel, and he worked in that capacity for a number of years. And he is actually depicted in Oliver Stone's motion picture on JFK as the colonel who sat on the bench with Kevin Costner, who was playing Jim Garrison, talking about the murder of John Kennedy and encouraging him to go on. And a lot of people want to know if that the meeting on the bench took place. It did not. There were a lot of telephone conversations and letters back and forth, but the meeting on the bench didn't take place. Well, under any circumstances, who do we have calling in?
Hello, doctor?
Yes, who's this?
This is Jim calling from Harbor Springs, Michigan.
Okay, good to have you with us, Jim. Go ahead.
Very interesting subject you have tonight. And like you say, it's like, I think, forget who it was that said that you just count on the stupidity of the American people. But you know, the one thing that I think we have a problem of as far as talk radio, especially on the shortwave, is that we have a failure sometimes to connect. We get so technical. We get so involved in so many issues, and not saying that the issues aren't credible. What happens is that if we talk to, you know, Joe Sixpack or mom and dad or whomever, we have a tendency to overload.
All right, and I think that that's exactly what they're doing, is they're overloading us with information so we can't think effectively. But I think this is really an important issue, and why is it important? Because if they could lie to us about that and convince the American people that there is a lone gunman, then they could probably lie to us about the murder at Ruby Ridge. They could lie to us about Waco. They could lie to us about Oklahoma City. They could lie to us about TWA Flight 800. And they certainly could lie to us about 9-1-1 and why we went to war with Afghanistan and Iraq and why we're going to war with Iran. The first thing we have to do is get people to begin to question. And that's why I do what I do.
Well, you know, I believe in what you're doing. And whether it be Alex Jones or all, you know, John Stadtmiller, all these other people, I think what you're doing is just wonderful. The problem I've had, I did educational research for many, many years. Some of my patriarchs were Charlotte Isabey, Anita Hogue, a lot of other people. And the problem I found, okay, doctor, was the fact that there's just so much information I had to find in my section of life, my little life, as far as what would actually an issue that I could get everybody involved in, everybody would agree with me on, whether it be liberal, conservative, and no matter what part of life you were from, one issue that would unite everybody.
All right, and what's that issue, Mike?
Well, the issue is, as John Stadtmiller and yourself and many other people say, that, we have congressmen who don't read legislation. Now, here's the secret, okay? Now, that is the point. And, well, if you're not reading your legislation, then who are you representing? Are you representing the Democratic Party, Republican Party? How do you know how to vote?
Okay.
And then I got into, years ago, was I got in contact with some people in the Heritage Foundation who were working with me without anybody knowing, and then I got into House rules.
All right.
Understand House rules work.
Well, because the problem with that is we have a lot of corrupt politicians back there. It doesn't matter, you know, what we know. How do we get them to vote right? The only way you're going to get them to vote right is if they know they're going to get thrown out of office if they don't vote right, because most of them aren't dedicated to the right or left. They're dedicated to staying in office. And the only way we're going to change anything is to get rid of those politicians. But even more than that, you know, I really believe that what we have to do is convince people this is a spiritual battle, and there is a spiritual blindness on the part of most people. And if we look at this purely from a mechanical or political point of view, we're going to lose this battle. It's a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield.
Right. But if you want to join all people, okay, and I've done this very successfully, okay, when you understand House rules,
all right,
you understand how people think.
All right. All right, fine. Well, I appreciate that very much.
Can I hold on? I would like to get more into this.
Okay, well, we really don't. I got a board full of people, but thanks for calling, Jim. And we'll be back in just a moment here with our with Mike. And, of course, House rules may well be very important, and perhaps Jim can call us again sometime on that. But when I've got a board full of people, why we want to get to them. So we'll be back in just a moment. And, of course, we're talking today about the murder of an American president. And I'd appreciate if you'd keep your calls on that subject, not get off on all sorts of side subjects, because in the final analysis, did Lee Harvey Oswald work alone? No, he did not. He was working for our intelligence agency. Well, we got Mike calling from Santa Cruz. Go ahead, Mike. Mike, go ahead.
It seems to me that anybody who believes that two airliners crashed into the World Trade Center towers must believe in conspiracies. Wouldn't you say?
All right, right. And so this was an Islamic conspiracy is the point that you're making.
Well, somebody must be conspiring, but those who, so many people who watched it happen still poo-poo conspiracy theorists, but they must, if they saw the planes go into those towers, they must believe in conspiracy.
Well, there had to be a conspiracy, because I really don't believe that. I mean, I've heard that many times. I know many people who do believe it, but it just doesn't seem to be logical that he could have turned, and Mrs. Conley wouldn't have seen him. Governor Conley wouldn't have seen him. Jacqueline Kennedy wouldn't have seen him. But I think that this is another one of the stories they're trying to get us to confused. But let's imagine that he did. I personally believe that the bullet, actually, that that hit the president jolted him backward and to the left. And if the, you know, as the fellow in the left front seat had fired, then he would have gone to the right. So I really think that is simply one more of the pieces of disinformation that put out to confuse people.
It's said to be, I don't want to say the name of the author, because I think he's a little bit of a kook myself, but apparently it's on the original Zapruder film.
I know, but of course, did we ever see the original Zapruder film, or did we see the one that we were supposed to see?
Right, yeah, well...
I mean, once the FBI got hold of that film, they can do anything they want to with it.
Yeah, but it seems like they would want it to look more like Oswald did it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, no, I think they really want to confuse us, Mike. I think that there is an organized plan to confuse us.
Done a good job of that.
They sure have. What we have to do is get the American people to understand that there is an organized effort to take us away from this issue. And the issue is, you know, was there a conspiracy? Were they able to control the reality of the American people? The interesting thing is, I think probably well over 50% of the American people today do not believe the government story. I think that's amazing. I think increasingly the American people are beginning to question what really happened on September 11th. And there have been polls taken in the city of New York, which you've never heard about, that show that over 50% of the people there do not believe the official government story. And they can black out the polls that they want to, and they can create any sort of polls that they want to as well.
Mm-hmm. And if anybody still wants to dispute what you're saying, the simplest thing, as you've said so many times, is to go look at the footage of Building 7 coming down. If you don't remember it yourself, I saw it. I knew what it was. It was a planned demolition. I saw it the day it happened. They showed it on TV. And, you know, this new movie, Flight 93, which I haven't seen yet, but as I understand, it does not show the towers coming down. I think there's a reason for that, and that is that they don't want to show it anymore because they know they botched it. They know it looks too much like a planned demolition, the two towers coming down, and they just don't want to show it anymore. They showed it over and over and over again for the psychological effect of terrorizing us through and through. They accomplished that purpose, but they know they can't. They know they're fairly transparent in doing that, although they were able to scare people quickly and easily with it. But
hold that thought right there,
Mike.
Hold
that.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Mike, do you have anything else you want to say before?
Oh, that's about it. Yeah, that's good enough.
Okay, very good. Thanks very much. Right. And now we're going to go to George, who's calling us from Pennsylvania. Now, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And we'd sort of like to know what you think about what happened as far as the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Have you heard, about Madeleine Duncan Brown, her book, about the interviews we have with her? Fascinating bits of history. Our interview, our first four tape set with Fletcher Prouty, a book about what he'd seen. And, of course, he was immediately attacked by the American medical profession and American Medical Association and the Journal of the American Medical Association. So and called, you know, a charlatan, a liar, and all these things, which they always do to discredit anybody who tells the truth. So Dr. Crenshaw sued them for libel. And rather than take it to court, they said, well, we know we're right, but we're going to give them, you know, $225,000 just because it's too expensive to take it to court. Why would you attack somebody and then refuse to defend your position? And, of course, certainly they could have won. Why, they could have countersued Dr. Crenshaw. They wanted this whole thing to die because the last thing they want is for the American people to question what happened that day. Because if that was a conspiracy and it was coordinated through the media, through the FBI and through the CIA and through the Warren Commission? Then what else are they lying to us about? And what about the coming attack on Iran? And what about the justification for the attack on Iraq? Well, let's go to George calling from Pennsylvania. Again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Hi, George. How are you doing?
All right. Thank you for all the programs you've brought and all the information that you've put together. It's just wonderful. The History Channel had a special on the Kennedy assassination that showed someone that had taken the Zapruder film and figured the angle that the bullet had come from. He said, I know exactly where it had come from. And he went to the location, and there is a drainage ditch alongside the road that is big enough for someone to stand in and walk out to the Trinity River. And I think that it didn't come from the grassy knoll. I really think it came from the ditch. If you look at the angle of the spray on the Zapruder film, I believe that he actually is correct. One other quick point is that in Revelation it talks about the Antichrist and how the Antichrist isn't labeled as a person, but people that don't believe in Christ, they will be, get above you and have control over you. In reading and with what's going on in the government and what they believe, it's just hard to say if we're not there now. Thank you very much for all the good programs.
God, thank you very much, George. Well, anyway, of course, we were talking today about a book entitled JFK and Sam. Certainly, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was having an affair with Judith Exner, and so was Sam Giancana. JFK was having an affair with Marilyn Monroe, and so was Sam Giancana. There's a wonderful book. It's called The Dark Side of Camelot. It's written by Seymour Hirst. It was written, I don't know, 10 or more years after the Kennedy assassination. And of course, Seymour Hirsch has said at the time, when he was collecting material for a book he wrote at the time of the assassination, everybody knew how promiscuous Kennedy was. I mean, he'd given an alley cat, would blush at the what he was doing, not with one woman, but several women at the same time. And Judith Exner tells that in her books as well. And she was infuriated by the things he was doing to degrade her and other women. But nobody would talk about this. In fact, it was at least media. Judith Exner, in her book, tells about how she would walk through the room. And, of course, all of the reporters were sitting there, and they all knew that she was a mistress for the President of the United States, but none of them would touch this at all. When you have a media that's controlled in this manner, how can you hope for the American people ever to know the truth? The tragedy is, of course, that certainly if you look at the makeup of the Warren Commission, I think there were 7 people on it. 3 of them came from the Council on Foreign Relations. 3 were Masons, and of course there was some overlap in there. Hale Boggs didn't believe in this. He wanted to put in a minority report. He wasn't allowed to. And then his plane went down. And of course the FBI knew where he was, and they left him and the man, the congressional candidate, with him to die. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And, of course, since our regularly scheduled guest apparently was at work and forgotten why it's going to be open lines. But I would appreciate if you would keep your remarks on this basic subject. Certainly going into the background of the murder of President Kennedy. We were telling you about our first tape set, and of course it includes my interview with Madeline Duncan Brown. And Madeline Duncan Brown, of course, was Lyndon Johnson's mistress, and she has an amazing story to tell. And then, of course, we have the 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who explains that all of the cabinet was taken out of the United States that very day. They were all flown to another country. He himself was sent to Antarctica. Why? Because they wanted to get everybody out of the country. They didn't know what was going to happen, especially if the American people should realize that this was, in effect, a coup d'etat. And they had to get rid of Kennedy for many, many reasons. First of all, because he was going to do away with the CIA and transfer intelligence responsibility to the military, and he had fired Alan Dulles, who's one of the leaders of this whole international cabal. Alan Dulles was the head of the CIA. His brother, John Foster Dulles, was the Secretary of State under President Eisenhower. And certainly John Foster Dulles and Alan Dulles had both been in Paris back in 1918 with Colonel Edward Mandel House. And of course, those of you who've heard my treatise on House will realize that he was deeply involved in the secret societies. He had powerful supernatural power, and among his disciples were Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, who became Secretary of State, Christian Herter, who became Secretary of State, Thomas Lamont of the Morgan Banking Company, certainly the leading columnists of that time, you know, the people who were influencing the American people and influenced them for so many years. And there were about 60 people who went to Paris with a group called The Inquiry. And Alan Dulles was an important part of that. Well, of course, by 1963, Alan Dulles had been thrown out of the CIA, but they were going to get revenge on an American president. And, of course, they simply killed him. Why? Because they had to get us into Vietnam. And why did they have to get us into Vietnam? Well, Vietnam was a wonderful diversion. And it was during those years of Vietnam that they found a woman had a right to kill a child within her, that they centralized all power in Washington, took God and prayer out of our schools, and, of course, changed our immigration laws. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and it's going to be open lines. Our guest Sam Giancata's daughter, and in the book is quoted as saying that her father said that he was going to get the Kennedys because he'd made a deal with them. And, of course, he, kept his part of the deal, and they did not. And, of course, Sam Giancata then, in 1975, when he was going to be subpoenaed to appear before the church committee to talk about the CIA involvement with the mafia and how the CIA was using the mafia for assassinations, not only in this country, but throughout the world. Just a few days before Sam Giancata was supposed to appear before the Church Committee, Senate Committee of the United States, he himself was murdered. John Rossellini, who was another mobster, who actually did appear before the Church Committee, they cut him up in little pieces and stuffed him into an oil barrel. And Judge Demorenschildt was supposed to testify. And I'm not sure whether it was the church committee or another committee, but he was suicided the very day, a couple of days before he was supposed to appear. They would do anything to keep the American people from understanding what's really going on in the world. And so much of this is actually laid out in this book, JFK and Sam, a fascinating overview of all the books that were written about what was going on. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Now, we all have our opinions, you know. We think that some guys are good guys because, well, everybody else says they're a good guy, and one of those is J. Edgar Hoover. We associate him with law and order and strict discipline than the days when the FBI was really an organization of integrity. The trouble was that J. Edgar Hoover insisted on morality among his own people. But he himself was a homosexual. He was a transvestite. He had his own lover. And, of course, the mafia had the goods on him. And so they had pictures of him. Of course, they were watching him, and he was watching the mafia. But the mafia threatened to expose, who he really was, and, of course, the degree of corruption that he had. And so for many, many years, he refused to go after the mafia, insisting that there was no central control over organized crime in the United States, in effect denying that the mafia operated as it did, until Bobby Kennedy became a senator, at least get some of them brought to justice. And so Hoover actually then was furious with the Kennedys because they'd embarrassed him. And this is, of course, part of this is covered in the book. They actually don't get into Hoover's homosexuality, but they do get into the fact that Hoover was covering for the mafia. And it's very difficult for many of the good anti-communist people I've worked with for many years to think that maybe J. Edgar Hoover is not the great hero we've always thought him to be. After all, he took a strong stand against communism. The difficulty is, of course, he was smart enough to realize that communism was being financed not from Moscow, it was being financed here in the United States. And although the American Communist Party was thoroughly infiltrated by the FBI, why, it was working hand in glove and being financed by people of great wealth in this country, like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation, and people of great wealth. Why? Because they wanted an enemy as a great diversion for us. And, of course, if you look at communism, what is it? Centralize all power in Washington, D.C. What is the power, the goal of the Great Tax Exempt Foundation and the Council on Foreign Relations? To centralize all power in Washington, D.C. Why? Because it is the antithesis of Americanism. America, this idea of a nation where men could be free, envisioned a decentralized authority with limited power in Washington, D.C., and then more power at the state level, and even more power at the local level. Matters dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be taken care of at the state level, never at the national level. And certainly, as far as taking care of the elderly, taking care of the impoverished, providing health care for those who couldn't afford it on their own, why, that was to be done at the local level. And when I went into medical practice, every county in the United States, that was their responsibility to provide for the health of people. And most of them had county hospitals. But you see, the government wanted to talk about it, so they kept talking about how terrible it was. Some people couldn't get health care. And so they beat this drum to get their first Medicare, Medicaid. And now, of course, they want to have total socialized medicine. And you think that medicine is expensive now? Just wait until it's free. Talk to the people in Canada. A lot of people from Canada come to the United States to get health care. Why do they do that? Because they just put you on a waiting list up there for an elective procedure, and you can wait until you die. And so a lot of them come down here, and they may have to put $50,000 or $100,000 out to get health care. And it's going to be, it's increasingly becoming like this in certain parts of our country. I know we had a friend who went to the hospital the other night with a daughter with a temperature of 104, and the nurse came out and said, well, you might as well go home and give her some Tylenol. It'll be 9 hours before we can get to her. In my community, at one time we had about five hospitals at this end of the county, and now, of course, we have two, but one of them doesn't have an emergency room. So what's happening, of course, all of these things are the direct result of socialism. We have more socialism in the United States than they ever had in Russia. And until you understand that what's happening is intentional, and, of course, that the Communist Party in the United States was funded by people of great wealth who wanted to centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and just as Karl Marx was funded by the League of the Just, which was a secret society, so much of what's going on today is in the hands of secret societies that, of course, killed the President of the United States, and, of course, plunged us into war after war after war, and is on the verge of plunging us into a war with Iran. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But let's, of course, get back to the subject of John Kennedy's assassination. And, of course, there are so many books, and so many of these books have actually supposedly been written by people who worked for the CIA or worked for the FBI, and all of them are there to deceive the American people. And very, very specifically, they have all of these books out there, and each one has different approaches. Was the man on the grassy knoll? Was he on the overpass? Or certainly, was he hiding in a ditch someplace? And, of course, if you see anything on the History Channel, understand the History Channel is part of the problem, part of the disinformation network that's out there. Well, we've got Kurt calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Kurt. How are you doing?
Fine. Have a couple questions.
Okay,
they may be different versions of the same question. You know, Joe Kennedy had determined to get his eldest son to be president.
Right.
And John was a default. But the questions I have are, you know, one, how, you know, there's a power trail of some kind or a money trail of some kind to become president, I believe. And then the other one is, what about Masonic influences with Kennedy? I mean, I know the Catholics claim to be anti-Masonic, but so many of the cardinals are part of P2.
Well, I think that both your points are very good. This book, I think, is probably as accurate as any you're going to find. And basically, the money trail, of course, Joe Kennedy put a lot of his own money in, but he got the mafia to put it in. Sam Giancana simply bought the primary election in Maryland and then bought the definitive election in Chicago. And, of course, you then that was through Illinois. It was a very, very close election. In fact, Richard Nixon could have challenged the election. There were a lot of improprieties there. But to his credit, and I give very little credit to Richard Nixon, he was really a very despisable individual, despicable individual who abandoned, you know, our boys in Vietnam. He knew we left them behind, and he would never have the courage to come forward and say, yes, I knew we abandoned them there. That I can't forgive him for, but at least he did not challenge the election. John Kennedy became the president. They were both came from the Council on Foreign Relations. They were both internationalists. But Richard Nixon was directly under the control of the Rockefellers. But to an extent, John Kennedy was, because who did he pick to be his Secretary of State? Do you remember who it was? It was a man named Dean Rusk, who just happened to have been the president of the Rockefeller Foundation. And you found that so many people associated with the Council on Foreign Relations were in Kennedy's government. But Kennedy, I think, had an independent streak in him. He really believed he was the president. He was going to do what he wanted to. And that's one reason why they killed him.
What about before that, though? I mean, we know about Rusk connections. But the fact that Joe Kennedy had planned to have his eldest son president, was there some occult or CFR connection when Jack was merely a college student?
Well, of course, as you remember, the older son was Joe, and he was killed in a bombing run during the Second World War. And at least to their credit, both Jack and John did, Joe and John did actually serve in the military during the Second World War. I don't think that there was any, to my knowledge, there was any occult influence there. There may be something that I'm missing, but certainly the occult is working in everything, because the occult works in the Council on Foreign Relations and in the Masons and in the Skull and Bones. You know, and they're really, if you go up in the internet, you'll find all sorts of sites for Satanism and for the Kabbalah and for the witchcraft and of course for the even the Process Church of the Final Judgment has sites up there. So certainly you can actually see the influence of the occult societies in the makeup of the Warren Commission, because three of the seven people there were Masons, and three of the seven people came from the Council on Foreign Relations, which is founded in the occult. So the occult was involved here. Certainly the man who sold the magic bullet theory was an assistant counsel. His name was Arlen Specter. Now, he's been very well rewarded for his betrayal and convincing the American people about this bullet that can dance up and down and reconstitute itself and shed all sorts of bullet fragments and then appear in pristine condition on the gurney there in the Parkland Hospital. And then, of course, Gerald Ford was on that. He was well rewarded. He became President of the United States.
Indeed.
And Hale Boggs was very concerned about that. And, of course, you know what happened to Hale Boggs.
Now, you know, T.R. evidently was a Mason, wasn't he?
Who was that?
Teddy Roosevelt?
I can't tell you that. I don't know.
I've wondered about him. He was always one of my heroes. But Wilson certainly has a shady background, as does FDR. And Truman blamed the Masons for all of his successes.
Well, I think there's one thing we can say about Teddy Roosevelt, and this is something I remember reading that Arthur Schlesinger wrote. And he said of Teddy Roosevelt, he was the first aristocrat that we had in the White House. In other words, he came from royal blood, and of course the Roosevelt family was really a very, very select family with a great deal of wealth. And, of course, they really gave us both Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and both of them centralized power in government. And in the name of breaking up the big trusts, and, of course, remember that Teddy Roosevelt was the trust buster. Why? He began to centralize more and more power in Washington, D.C., and we really needed, of course, to break up the trust. But we didn't go about it the right way.
Now, what royalty was Teddy related to?
Well, this is what the term that Arthur Schlesinger referred to them as aristocrats.
I see. Well, of course, Lincoln was the first big government president.
Right.
But
he wasn't an aristocrat. He came from the common folks. He was raised in a log cabin. But Teddy came from people of great wealth. Now, a lot of the things he said, he was a very dramatic individual. He liked to hunt bear. He was an outdoorsman. But it was all staged. I mean, he got his real being pushed forward during the Spanish-American War, which was a totally contrived war. We never should have gotten into that. But he led the charge up San Juan Hill and gained national popularity. And, of course, after the part of that war, we killed 200,000 Filipinos. It's amazing. We never talk about all the Filipinos we killed in that war. And what was their crime? They wanted to be free. They didn't want to be part of the American Empire.
Yeah, that's one particular tragedy that's seldom mentioned.
It is. What, anything else you wanted to ask her?
Well, it just seems suspicious that the Kennedys, I mean, you know, they had, of course, supposedly from German intelligence, there are conversations that were recorded between Churchill and FDR, where Churchill was basically rubbing FDR, and that they purposely knocked off Joe Kennedy in that flight. But
I really can't tell you. I never heard that, but it could very well. Nothing would surprise me at all.
Yeah,
but you remember that both Winston Churchill and FDR were both deeply involved in the occult. FDR was certainly a 32nd degree Mason. Churchill was a Druid, and he was a Mason as well. And, of course, you know, if you get into the background, there's no question at all that both of these people were deeply involved in the occult. I mean, Churchill insisted on the invasion of Gallipoli during the First World War, which prolonged the war, and cost 300,000 lives.
Actually, I've got some books laid out at home to do some research on that. They give a contrary point. I'll send that stuff on down.
All right, fine. Well, appreciate it, Kurt, and thank you so very much for giving us a call.
Well, the other question there is, like I say, there must have been some influence. Joe Kennedy's becoming an ambassador, and his power.
Well,
there
must
be more than
that. It was FDR's appointment.
Yeah, but why?
I don't know. You'll have to. I really haven't thought of that.
That may have a lot to do with the Kennedy, John Kennedy's situation. I'm sure it does.
It may have, but I've never even thought of that.
Okay. I'll send that stuff down to you on Gallipoli.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye now.
Okay, fine. Now let's go to, is this Robert calling?
Yes, sir, it is. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Where are you calling from, Robert?
Ringwood Village. It's right outside of Denver.
All right, fine. Good to have you with us. Do you listen to our morning program there?
It's hard for me to do that, Doctor, because I'm usually working. And
Well, you got to make a living, so that's you're forgiven if you got to work.
Yeah, I kind of do. So you're retired, so you have the best of both worlds.
Right. Okay, fine. Well, what can we do? Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, you just mentioned someone that I want to ask about. I saw a movie that's pretty much a classic. I'm sure you've seen in your day. Judgment at Nuremberg.
Yes, Yeah, that's Burt Lancaster. Burt Lancaster and Spencer Tracy.
Yeah. In that movie, the defense attorney who was defending Burt Lancaster and the other judges mentioned a quote by Winston Churchill, something like that Adolf Hitler was a great man. I'm paraphrasing, something like that. I don't know if that quote was true or not, but my question is, what was the connection, if any, between Churchill and Hitler?
All right, fine. Well, we're going to have to just take a break here, and then you just hang on, and we'll try to answer that as best we can.
Okay.
But, of course, Adolf Hitler was under the influence of a group known as the Round Table. There's a wonderful book. It's been pretty well suppressed. It was written by Lieutenant Colonel Byrd, Eugene Byrd, who was a commander at Spandau, where they kept Rudolf Hess. And we'll have to tell you more about that when we get back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got certainly Robert calling from Greenwood Village there in Colorado. He's asking what the relationship was between Churchill and Adolf Hitler. basically, they were both deeply involved in the occult. I mean, there was competition between them, but they were both involved. What people don't understand is that this book, this comes from several books. One is called Prisoner Number 7. The other is A Motive for a Mission, which was written by the son of the Duke of Hamilton, I think it was. But it had to do with Rudolf Hess. Why did Rudolf Hess fly to England, during the Second World War? Well, he wanted to contact a group in England known as the Round Table. And the Round Table, of course, was the front for Cecil Rhodes' secret society, which controlled England at that time, and had been actually encouraging Adolf Hitler when he invaded the Alsace-Lorraine, when he invaded Austria, when he invaded the Sudetenland. And Adolf Hitler, was going against the advice of all of his generals and doing all of these invasions, and they all worked, and the German generals couldn't understand why the Allies didn't take any action against him. Some of this is covered in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in High Time, when he explains how this little group, which was known in England as the Cliveden Set, but was really a front for the Round Table, which was a front for Cecil Rhodes' secret occult society, they were encouraging Adolf Hitler at every turn. They were using Adolf Hitler, because they wanted the Second World War, and he was going to be the mechanism by which they got it. Now, Hitler was an evil and wicked man, but so were the people who financed him. And, of course, we actually have an interview from Ambassador Dodd, the American ambassador to Germany at that time, asking Colonel House, 1936, why are American corporations building up Adolf Hitler when certainly they can't get any money out of the country? I mean, 100 American corporations are building up the German war machine. Doesn't make any sense. Well, it didn't make any sense to Ambassador Dodd. But you understand, we were creating the best enemy money could buy. And Hitler was being encouraged at every turn by the Cliveden Set, tied into the Round Table Group, which, of course, is what Hess was trying to contact, because he thought they could work out some sort of a peace treaty. The Germans wanted to stop the war. But, of course, the English were not about to allow that to happen. They wanted this terrible and bloody war so they could bring about a one-world government. They could bring about the United Nations. And Winston Churchill was an integral part of that. Have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
I'm sorry, what was the question, Doctor?
Have you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness?
No, sir, but I saw the video.
All right, fine. Well, certainly we point out that Winston Churchill was a disciple of this whole idea of world government. Hey, thanks so much for calling.
No problem. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, if you'd like to know more about the relationship between Adolf Hitler and Winston Churchill, I suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And, of course, we have a great deal of information. Certainly, the close relationship between the secret society that controlled Great Britain and Adolf Hitler is covered in Professor Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. So we carry that book. It was suppressed for many years, but we actually carry it. We have an interview with Professor Quigley, and that's in our Secret Government 4-tape set. These are foundational to an understanding of what's going on today. America is controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. The Secretary of State always comes from the CFR. The Director of the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, with one brief period, always comes from the CFR since it was founded back in the late 1940s. The chairman of the Federal Reserve System always comes from the CFR. You would think that there might be somebody out there who'd be competent and didn't have to come from the CFR, but the CFR is a front for a secret society. It was known as the Round Table, but it was really formed by Cecil Rhodes in 1891. It based in the occult. All of this is based in the occult. So if you'd like to get Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, I recommend it. If you'd like to hear the interview with Professor Quigley, it's called The Secret Government. But then get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will actually short-circuit a lot of things, so you don't have to read the 1,342 pages of Tragedy and Hope. You'll just get the high points and at least know where to go to get the information about what we're talking about. So the information is there. It's hidden in plain sight. You need to help us get it out across America. If you'd like to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, if you'd like to get the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we've kept in print for the last decade, certainly one of the most important books available, goes into how the great tax-exempt foundations are financing communism and socialism. If you'd like to get the book, Fire in the Minds of Men, written by James Billington, the Librarian of Congress, which tells you about the secret societies that were here at the time of the American Revolution and the French Revolution, and all during the 19th century, that led to the Russian Revolution and the Cuban Revolution. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, we hope many of you go to our website of RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. There's so much information there. Let me suggest one of our new talks. It's called World Revolution. It's available on video, and certainly it gives you the background of this continuing revolution that began with the American Revolution. It's based on James H. Billington's book. James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, and you will actually see there an interview I did back in 1980, I guess it was, with Ambassador Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba, where he tells you how everybody knew Fidel Castro was a communist. We brought him to power knowing he was a communist. Ambassador Smith knew, the State Department knew, John Foster Dulles knew. President, or Christian Herter, I've forgotten, who was the Secretary of State at that time, certainly the President, they all knew Fidel Castro was a communist. We create the best enemies money could buy. And then, of course, we go into the Bay of Pigs. Bay of Pigs was fought to lose, intentionally, but to give the American people all, shucks, gee, we made another terrible mistake. We didn't make a terrible mistake. The flights that could have saved the men on the beach was called off by a man named McGeorge Bundy, National Security Advisor, member of Skull and Bones, member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He left government to head the Ford Foundation, president of the Ford Foundation. It's all there. All you need to do, of course, is begin to look under the rocks and you find really how this all ties together. And behind this is a conspiracy against God. And they're using the military and financial power of the United States to bring about a one-world government and a one-world religion. Their goal is to destroy the sovereignty of our country. They're doing a good job. That's what the immigration's all about. That's why they refuse to enforce the immigration laws. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty.